Welcome back to the TV Top Machine. Thank goodness it's episode number 70 now.
We can move on from that. It was a trap. You know how they call those like trap games in football and basketball? Uh-huh. That was a trap podcast.
It was. That's Tim Goodman, the host of the show, by the way, over there. And I'm Jason Snell. I'm the guy who talks to him. I'm over here. And this is the podcast that we do about television, I think. Right.
And that was, yes, and that was my 14-year-old who was trapped in podcast number 69. So thank God we're at 70.
Yeah, we got out of it. We had a special letter for episode 69 and everything, but we moved on. We're in the 70s now. Disco is coming.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah. So I've got a few letters, not a lot. It's kind of quiet. It's a quiet time, but there are a few things going on. Your review of Better Call Saul season 2 popped up, I saw.
Yes, indeed. Indeed it did. I got that up quick. That was yesterday. And today, probably exactly when we're doing this podcast, although I don't know for sure, we should have the review up soon of me reviewing Triumph the Insult Comic Dog's election special that dropped on Hulu without any warning or advanced
surprise. They can do that now.
You know, everybody from Beyonce to Hulu, it's all happening.
Well, and Louis C.K., right, did his Horace and Pete thing that was a totally surprise thing, too.
Yep, I guess maybe that's like the new thing now. Just put stuff out for free on the internet.
Surprise TV. Well,
like a podcast.
He paid like $5, or we had to pay $5 for the Horace and Pete episode one, I think.
Right, and then they knocked it down to, I think, $2 or $2.50.
For episode two. Crazy stuff, but yeah.
It is very, very odd.
So let's start with Better Call Saul, because I know people, especially fans of Breaking Bad, and they watched season one. So has anything changed in season two, or is it very much like season one?
Well, you know, they're certainly promising that there will be change, and they're promising that the transformation from Jimmy McGill to Saul Goodman will happen a little quicker, but unfortunately we were only given the first two episodes to review for season two, and they are, in the tradition of the season one that was finished, the first 10, slow. And that's fine. I think I don't have anything against slow. I think there's a knee-jerk, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Rectify, so come on. And I was one of the early proponents of slow TV, but I think when you use slow as a criticism, sometimes people, their knee-jerk reaction is that's not fair. And I, you know what? In this case, it is fair because, you know, there's just not a lot happening because last time we left Bob Odenkirk as Jimmy McGill, who will become Saul Goodman, he was, you know, the whole first season was him struggling to sort of become like a con artist and then become a better citizen and a lawyer because of his brother Chuck, played by Michael McKean. And that took a long time for that to come. And I know they wanted to tell the backstory of how we got to Saul, which was good. My two complaints about the series are the smallest one is that it's taking a while to get there because it's just a lot of Jimmy turning out to be a decent enough lawyer and, more surprisingly, a pretty good guy. Somebody that's lovable. You root for him. He does kind of have a propensity for, like, tricking people or whatever. But they're not. He dupes people, but they're never. It's never done in a mean spirit. He's not taking advantage in these little cons of like weak people or whatever. It's always somebody mean or calculating, which, you know, they want to keep him likable. But my bigger problem is that because they decided to make Jimmy so sweet and likable, you know, they had to make two different shows, right? People loved Saul because he's funny and he's moralless and he helps these guys out on Breaking Bad, out of jam after jam. His ethics are not there, but he understands the law. He's a slick hips, you know, he's a shyster, all this great stuff about him. Well, none of that is really true in Jimmy McGill in Better Call Saul, because he's a little bit of it, but mostly he's a good guy. And so if you're actually saying that Saul Goodman was actually a pretty good guy who was on the straight and narrow and could have had a really lucrative career and successful career, he was on partner track to become a lawyer. but then gets out of it because of his brother, who, you know, has this Cain and Abel like jealousy, and went to a better school and thinks that Jimmy is just kind of a huckster, and so that forces Jimmy out. That if you want to follow that story, great, and I'll watch it. But I think you've got all kinds of problems when that happens.
This is the prequel problem, right? I mean, in general, it's not just that you know the destination, but, you know, it's hanging over you, and it's not like they're not going to go in that direction. It also means that creatively they have to go in that direction because they have to be, they're slaves to the end product of Breaking Bad. Even though they, you know, are trying to make their own show, in the end, they can't make a creative decision to go in a different direction, really.
And it's funny because, you know, I don't read comments, but people were responding to my thing on Twitter about it. And they like Jimmy McGill, and I like Jimmy. And there's two problems. There's two problems that people were I'm having a hard time getting them to separate. One is that I like Jimmy too. But Saul is a much better character. He's just, that's why there is actually a spin-off series, people, is because Saul was so great. And people, he could support it because we liked him to be as bad as he was. No morals. When you give us the prequel, you know, great, we're going to get to this character we love. But as you're taking us to the story, you kind of introduce this weirdly unexpected element that Jimmy wasn't a bad guy at all, and that he could have been a good guy and had a career. So it kind of makes his transformation into Saul a little bit more sad. And I'm not so sure I'm excited to see him to become Saul if he has to be like this person who is basically forced to make this choice that's not a good choice, and it kind of ruins his life. And you know, let's not forget, too, some people are like, oh, you know, Saul's this and that. Let's not forget Breaking Bad is over, and Saul is on the run, and he's lost, he's hiding, and he's depressed working at a Cinnabon. So it did not work out well for Saul Goodman. Let's be very clear on that. So since we know that, and there won't be a third season of like what happens to Saul after the fact, after Breaking Bad, you know, you get this Jimmy story, which I think I'll watch it. It just creates problems that I didn't think were going to be there. I didn't think I was going to end up liking Jimmy, and that it was going to be a kind of a melancholy story.
Have they said they will never go forward?
I don't think that they have, actually. So that's possibly on the table, although that would present some other challenges that they did talk about when they were first pitching the story well before we saw it. They know that certain things they would have to bring back, and I'm not sure they want to do that because that now starts to change the way people looked at Breaking Bad, and you don't want to do that.
I just, you know, it would be an interesting decision if they even went back and forth a little bit between his outcome and his, you know, present, quote unquote, present day, and how the one leads to the other. But that would be different than a pure prequel. But you're right. Then you're touching the, you know, sort of the sacred ground of Breaking Bad if you do that.
Yeah, that's like running blindly on a track. So you're going to hit that third rail pretty soon. And you don't want to mess up the legacy of Breaking Bad. And I'm happy that people think that Better Call Saul is a great show. I don't think it's quite a great show yet. I think it could be. I think it's a very strong show. I've talked to you about this before. But when I read people say that the first season of Better Call Saul was better than the first season of Breaking Bad, that's just, to me, that's insanity. I can't even have that conversation with people because that is so incredibly wrong. I don't even think Vince Gilligan would even dare mention that. So you have to protect the one that's going to go down in history as a top five show, possibly a top three show, which is Breaking Bad. You have to protect that. I don't know where Better Call Saul is going to go, but it certainly didn't have a great quote-unquote first season. I had a very strong, but way too early to judge somebody going into their second season against somebody who did five fantastic seasons.
Sure. But people who like the first season, it's going to pick up where it left off, and they're going to get more of that.
Yeah, and you know, the one good thing that I will say that they did, well, the bad thing is that AMC should have given us more episodes to review. I think that was a real mistake, and I don't know why they did that. Because they had, I think they have it. That's the problem. I'm I'm almost 1,000% sure that they have it and can get it to us. The good thing is that they expand the periphery characters, which is what you need to make a better series. So Rhea Seehorn, who plays Kim Wexler, who's Jimmy's girlfriend, she gets an expanded role and good. And much more importantly, Michael McKean, who plays Chuck, his brother, you know, I didn't find that first season storyline interesting. I thought it was quirky and played for laughs. You know, he has that electromagnetic sensitivity issue where he has to be put in foil and you can't have any electronics, no phones, no electricity. That played to me like it looked good on paper as an idea, like a conceit. And then I think they struggled with it this season. Like, okay, how do we make this more than just more interesting? And then there was a revelation, obviously, at the end of the first season that Chuck is a little meaner than we thought he was. And they're going to definitely, they didn't show him that much in the first few episodes, but the bit that they do show in the second episode, I think clearly continues the storyline that Chuck is not a good brother and that he is instrumental in eventually creating Saul Goodman.
All right. So that returns on the 15th, right? So
yes,
Monday.
Monday.
All right. So what about Triumph? Triumph, the insult comic dog, he's back.
He is back, and he's a longtime favorite of mine. He's not everybody's cup of tea, but he's mine because I love that kind of humor.
Sort of bitter black tea.
Bitter, dark, and blunt, and politically incorrect and awful. You know, I'm the first to say that a lot of that stuff, some of it doesn't work. A lot of it through the history of Triumph, it doesn't work, but boy, when it does, it's pants-wettingly funny, and it's really hard not to laugh at how audacious Robert Smigel is. So yeah, to have him come into this election and spoof or make fun of both Republicans and Democrats, often to their faces, is great, and to the people who support them, even funnier, because it really reveals. And I wrote in my review, it's like you want to face palm yourself about the future of this country. It's like, really? Can people be this stupid? And he dupes them in a lot of creative ways and brings out their cluelessness and their closed minds and their passion at all costs, and that cost being often reason and facts. And I think we needed that in this election because everybody from Hillary down to Trump and Hillary, the front runners down to Rubio and all these people and Cruz, they're all people who can be made fun of. So yeah, it's really good. It's a little bloated. It's almost 90 minutes. So some of that doesn't work. They do some studio bits that aren't super funny. When he's on the road, it's really good. And I will give them credit for proving that if you're losing an election, or not election, but basically the primaries, if you're in the polls and you're low and you're not getting invited to some of these debates, you will pretty much do anything up to and including talking to a dog.
Debasing yourself
right?
To a dog puppet.
Who has a cigar, mm-hmm. and is going to ask you about how fat you are. And basically make fun of where you are. Like there is an extended bit of Mike Huckabee in this, which all I can tell you is jaw dropping because of Huckabee's willingness to make fun of himself, which is, that's great that he would do that. He was in the race at that time, unfortunately, and now he's dropped out. I wonder why, but, the things that he will do, you're kind of like, is there no handler for this guy? It's crazy. But one of the first jokes that's so great is they follow Huckabee to a shooting range. And Triumph says, and here he comes from the bus, surrounded by throngs of press. There's no one there. Like, no one. No one. And he says, and he's chosen to come to a shooting range. Or what mass murderers in this country call the gym. Mm. And so the first question to Huckabee is, why are you still in the campaign? Is it because you want to stay away from crowds? Oh man, it's just, it's brutal. And it just goes on and on. So that part's good. The two things that struck me were like how real people were duped and like a lack of self-awareness from people. Like, clearly this is a dog talking to you. And if you don't know who, you don't have to know who Triumph is, but all you have to do is listen to him for 5 seconds and know, like, oh, I shouldn't be involved in this. Because clearly I'm being made fun of. And yet no one or very few people sort of turn on their heels and walk away, and they all dig themselves deeper. He does something that's very funny, I want to point out, which is creative, which is like, you know what, you always want Robert Smigel to bring something new to the shtick, which is basically him in a microphone and asking people very uncomfortable questions. Well, it was great because he realized two things. One, that he couldn't get close to a lot of the bigger candidates. So he asked regular people to go in and ask questions for him. And the way he did it is so clever. And for example, he has an African-American woman pretend to be in a wheelchair, because what politician could not talk to that person? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you're just cringing when you see it. And he's laughing as it's going, and he because he can't get to the Clinton people. And so he has this woman who's totally game to do this, roll up in her wheelchair, gets pushed up by a guy with a microphone. And she says, one of the guys, she says, two of the handlers, two different times of Hillary's handlers. And the question was, when Hillary goes to her hairdresser, does she bring a picture of Siegfried or Roy? And it's just like, wow. And, but the really creative part was, he hired a bunch of, and this is great because they're in on the joke. He said he hired a bunch of robotic blonde women posing as Fox News reporters.
Sure.
And so that's very clever. And he made up a fox-like logo, but you have to be paying attention. It doesn't say Fox. It's basically covered. But they are all very good-looking blonde women, and they go out to these campaign rallies, and they interview people and get them to say crazy things. But more importantly, they basically say, okay, we're just getting some news that, you know, some other campaign has said this, and then gets their reaction to it. And it's astonishing what people will either agree to or say, yeah, that's not going far enough. There's a thing where one person has said, oh, that Cruz is pushing children into a pool. Small children into a pool. How does that make you feel? Another one where Trump dumped somebody from a wheelchair into a porta potty, and the woman is still trying to support Trump, and that he didn't mean it, I'm sure. And it's just a great mirror on sort of the dumbassification of America.
Amazing. Well, as we spoke, your review got posted.
Did it? Look at it! Woohoo! Excellent.
So people can check that out, and I'll put that in the show notes.
Okay.
As well.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing how that happens. That's the second straight podcast where one of your reviews is posted while we record. It's amazing.
Yeah. Never say I'm not working.
Powerful. Powerful stuff. Yeah. Hey, I got a couple of news notes to share with you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Master of None was renewed officially for a season 2. Sounds like maybe that was a little bit more of just asking Aziz Ansari and Alan Yang to be sure of like what they wanted to do and that they had material for a second season and get the approvals. But that was a piece I saw from the Hollywood Reporter's own Leslie Goldberg earlier today that they it's a go for Master of None season 2.
Yes. Kind of a foregone conclusion, but yes, yeah. But probably you're right. They probably said to NZs, do you have time to do this? And because obviously you can do it as many as you want. Yeah.
So
as long as you want, probably.
So 2017, he says, coming 2017. They have, you know, no other information other than that. But I think it's great. Great news, though, right? I mean, that was a spectacularly good new comedy. So
yeah, that's great news. And in 2017 is interesting because he must be doing a lot of stuff in 2016, and he's going to take him that a long time to set it up. But
yeah, he's probably in movies and stuff now too. So he's probably got stuff going on where to get everybody together and to write the whole thing. I'm not sure they, you know, it's not like they have written things in advance. It sounded like they were still talking about what they would do. So they got to write it, and then they got to shoot it and produce it. And who knows? And Netflix might say, we don't even have a room for it in our schedule, so let's run it next year. But
right, exactly.
I'll look forward to it. That's good news.
Yeah, and they've got a lot, as we've talked about in the past, they have a lot of content. Maybe
yeah,
they don't have room
billion
for it,
dollars worth.
So. Right.
They're busy.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Another piece of news, and I'm going to pass the note that came from Eric in the 925 about this, which was Eric wrote, "The Flash is coming to Supergirl?" was the question mark. But yes, that was also news that the Supergirl, I guess the Flash is going to appear on Supergirl. And so that's an interesting sort of CW to CBS crossover that they, I saw an Instagram picture. It looks like they're shooting that this week. So that'll be in a couple of, like a month or two, that episode will be airing.
Great. So
that's kind of fun. Yeah. Little crossover. I think Supergirl keeps getting better. I think maybe they're finding their feet now with that show. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get some of the Flash viewers to tune over to CBS and sample Supergirl. And actually, Supergirl appeared in The Flash this week. There's a they go like from to a parallel Earth, and while they're traveling, they see all these sort of images of other things, and one of them is of Supergirl flying. So they're definitely shamelessly laying the groundwork for the next corporate TV crossover.
Yes, I heard that amongst the many big things that were happening on Flash this week, that was one of them.
Yeah, that was a hilarious. I mean, I know you only check in every now and then with the Flash, but it's been a plot the whole year that there's this parallel Earth and they go back and forth, or characters go back and forth between the parallel Earth, and the big bad for the season is coming from the parallel Earth. But what I loved about this week's, it's a two-part episode, so this week's episode and presumably next week's episode is, for all of the plot implications of them going to this parallel Earth, it's basically played for laughs in large part. It's funny. It's a kick. It's that episode that every sci-fi TV show sort of does, where there's a what if kind of, you know, what if things were a little bit different kind of thing, and yeah. they indulge themselves, and I thought it worked. I thought it was, it had just the kind of funny, lighthearted tone that I like from that show. So, you know, I was very happy with it.
Good.
Yeah, that's good. They're doing good stuff. They do good work with the Flash. Also got a note from somebody who said it looks like Agent, this was Jason Barry, who popped in to say it looks like maybe this is the second season of Agent Carter, maybe the end for that, because Haley Atwell, who is the star of that show, got signed to do another pilot for ABC, which suggests that ABC would like to keep her and does not expect Agent Carter to come back. And I know that they greenlighted a pilot for another Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff, so it sounds like maybe that's the trade, is, you know, the new spinoff comes in and Agent Carter goes out. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a possibility, that the other spinoff being the thing that kind of makes this a little more of a murky industry story. But she, just to be clear, she is cast as a, she's in the backup position in the pilot, meaning.
Oh, so if they renew Carter, they would need to work around the Agent Carter. I mean, it's all ABC Studios, so it sounds like the willingness is there if that did it. But the report I saw suggested sort of it seemed unlikely that Agent Carter would come back.
Yeah, I think that's still speculation, and normally I would agree with that. I'm interested to, well, just to back up the idea of you, of her being, she's in second position, which means if Agent Carter continues, she can't be in that role. So they would either have to recast it or rethink it or whatever. So they'll probably recast it. But then you have the idea of, okay, if they don't cancel Carter, are they also now going to have these two spinoffs from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? And I think that the part that's unclear in all of this is that I think Agents was an underperforming show that they had to get used to it being so far underperforming of what they had initially expected. And then they did. But are they going to now give up too really quickly on Agent Carter, maybe not being able to, and have to admit that they couldn't launch that? Hmm. Any other property, maybe, but when you're dealing with Marvel, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I don't know what the rules are, because the rules seem to be different for Marvel, and at ABC they seem to be different. Agent Carter, I know people like it. Like, I always hear more compliments about Agent Carter than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and it is this miniseries, essentially, where it's fitting in between the two sort of half seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I'm not sure that's what the plan is for this other spinoff. It might be more, you know, an actual show that has a large larger order. It's a little bit of a mystery. I'm also a little mystified by the fact that they're taking one of the great finds of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is Adrienne Pilecki from Friday Night Lights. She's actually was a great find on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so of course take her off that show and give her own show, which is fine, except that's let's take all the interesting characters off of the one show. I don't see why that is a good thing for your existing show. I don't know. Also interesting about this pilot that she's on, which is called Conviction, is it's actually co-created by Liz Friedman, who ran Marvel's Jessica Jones. So she's got a Marvel ABC Studios kind of connection, and I like Jessica Jones, so I think that's an interesting. It's a weird kind of sort of like a thriller with a little genre action thing. So who knows if that pilot will even, you know, lead to anything. But I heard from some Agent Carter fans because that show just came back and the people are really liking it, and it may be the end of the line, but who knows?
Yeah.
Hayley Atwell's good.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. We'll get to see more Hayley Atwell no matter what. But that's funny for me because maybe I'm part of the problem. I liked Agent Carter better than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I'm not currently watching Agents of Carter.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. I've got them queued up, but I liked it better too. I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the same story. I think it's better than it's been, but I don't know. There's something about it. It's just not that exciting.
Right.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about is I know that your colleague, Dan Feinberg, did the review. Have you seen the new Samantha Bee show?
I have not. No.
All right.
I'm excited that it turned out that way because I was not impressed by the clips that they showed at press tour. I didn't think any of it was funny and seemed very forced. It seemed very Daily Show. So, I definitely was happy to hear. I read his review and I was happy to hear that, you know, others seemed to think she did a great job. So maybe when they finally got it all put together in one package, it looks better.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I find that also interesting that she's doing essentially the John Oliver thing, where she's doing a weekly, it's a weekly show. It's a Monday weekly, half hour show.
Half hour, yeah.
So a similar sort of thing to what John Oliver's trying, at least in that sense of rather than trying to replicate the Daily Show, and do 4 days a week, it's a single show. And speaking of which, John Oliver is back for his third season starting on Sunday, I believe.
Right, so. Boy, yeah, isn't that great to have him back right now?
Mm-hmm.
It should be perfect.
Good time.
There's so much good stuff in this election, and it's this flashes back to John Stewart wishing he wasn't leaving at the time because Trump was getting in and it was going to get crazy, which of course it did. So yeah, it's a good time to have him back. I still wish the show was an hour though. Boy.
Yeah, I know. I wish that HBO had some sort of schedule flexibility to just let him go over and let him be 40 minutes or whatever. It's Sunday night, just sort of schedule whatever afterward and let the chips fall and, you know. But I guess leave them wanting more, but I always want more after the Last Week Tonight episodes are over.
Yeah,
he's
spectacular.
What do you think? Did you see Colbert after the Super Bowl?
No, I saw little clips of it online, and I thought they were fine, but it wasn't in context. I think people who went to it after the Super Bowl in context thought it didn't seem like him.
Yeah, it was a little weird. It was fine. I think the Will Ferrell bit was the best bit, which is again a super meta talk show kind of bit where he's essentially auditioning to be the animal person to basically be the Jack Hanna of Stephen Colbert's Late Show, and that was a funny bit. That was a laugh out loud funny bit, but I don't know. It was a little bit weird. It was not, I think, him in his element. I think that's true.
And the plus side is he got a whole lot more viewers than he's ever had. The question is, will those people come back, or were they just kind of like post Super Bowl high or low, as it were, since it was a terrible game and terrible commercials?
Yeah.
Were they just leave the TV going and then now will they come back?
Yeah, I don't know.
So.
Yeah, but you do what you can with that audience. You got that audience.
Know.
You expose somebody to it and see what happens. You want to do a few letters? We've only got a few.
Let's do those. Sure.
All right.
Is there a hobo in there? Whether it's a
no
woman or not.
No hobos, but we do have an update from Dean of the 707 on his travels.
Okay.
He reports in from Missouri that they watched the John Larroquette show on YouTube, and they watched Ken Burns' Mark Twain at the Hannibal Museum. So
nice.
Some Missouri action.
Yes, he's being conceptual. Dean is being very conceptual.
Yes, and watching shows from states when he's in those states. And also, of course, drinking at bars in states.
Well, we would expect nothing less, nor want nothing less for him to do that. I should chip in here. You and I certainly have not planned this, nor do we plan much. But I should say that I did tweet out that I was watching, because, you know, it's on now, and the Triumph Hulu special. And Indy Sarah said that she was loving it too and watching it at the same time. And then she retweeted again saying she's actually stopped watching. She says, I actually stopped myself during Triumph on Hulu so I could start over with friends. This is too good not to share. Yeah. And I have invited San Francisco Chronicle political writer Joe Garofoli over to my house tonight to rewatch it myself.
Beautiful. Joe Garofoli, listeners of the previous TV Talk Machine will know him as Question Boy. And he just got a big promotion. He's like the chief California politics correspondent for the Chronicle now.
Yes.
Don't let it get to his head. Okay.
Oh, it's that head is, well, A, it's bald, but
it's totally
there
bald.
We go.
And
there
he's going to, he's going to mention the 6 Super Bowl wins by the Steelers.
It's going to be painful.
See, this is why do you even do
I don't
this
even
to
know
yourself?
Why I ask him. I don't know why I ask him over. But this was in his wheelhouse because it's 14-year-old humor, which is what Triumph basically is, because there's a lot of sex jokes and there's a lot of defecating jokes.
Yep.
And it makes people very uncomfortable, which Joe loves. Mm-hmm. And he and I share that sensibility. So we will clearly, much like Indy Sarah is having, we will have the same kind of joy tonight together watching it. Yep.
Beautiful. Well, say hi for me.
I will certainly do that.
Love Joe. It's great to see. And I was very happy to see that he got his.
Yes, I was happy on QB. Yeah.
Yeah. Good old QB. who's brought in to read the questions to you. And
yes.
That was not the thing he was good at.
No, he was terrible at
that. He was good at lots of things on the old TV Talk Machine. Uh-huh. Reading the questions, not.
That's terrible. Which became its own shtick.
Brutal.
So here we go. This is from Paul. I don't know where he is from, but anyway, it's an email from Paul.
Get it together, Paul.
Yeah, I think he shared this like from his phone or something, because he shared a webpage with us that I'll put in the show notes. But the webpage is called Eyes of a Generation, and he says, I noticed the network look as a young lad in the 60s. Every network seemed different. I learned at the time that the networks had camera preferences. So this is about like why do shows look like, and we thought maybe somebody would answer it. Every network had camera preferences. The camera manufacturers used different image technologies. He said, back in the 60s, I thought ABC was the bright, NBC was dark, and CBS was in between. I can instantly tell which broadcast network the TV is on. I think today the look is ingrained into the network's DNA. So basically, maybe they're not using different equipment, but they've tuned their look to fit. But back in the day, they actually would have their official, like the cameras that CBS uses and the cameras that NBC uses. And as a result, that would lead to having the look as well, which is interesting. I'll put the link in the show notes, but that was an interesting little tidbit from Paul, I thought, about like how you create kind of a brand identity without even looking at or without even like watching the show for the content or what the premise is or anything, just from how it looks. That maybe that is a real thing, and maybe it dates to the days where they were picking specific cameras.
Yep. Well, that could be good. And nice for somebody to jump right on that.
Yep. That's because we were not going to do it.
No, and clearly we were going down. We were going down a circle. By the way, because we were in 69, we were just like falling down the drain. So.
Yeah, we were. We had hit the bottom of the drain. It was going to happen. Okay, so from the 859. This is James in the 859. That is Kentucky. I don't think he's in the holler though.
Not in the holler though.
No.
You know what? I really need to learn those two. I got to figure it out. It was told to me clearly, even on TVTM, but I'm not paying attention. Shocker. And I got to get it down though. One's in the holler, one's not.
Yeah, that's right. This is A59. So it's central Kentucky. It's Lexington and all that. So I don't know. It could be in the holler, but I bet it's not. Anyway,
I don't think it is.
Here's what James says. So the news came that CBS has canceled the show Angel from Hell.
Yes.
Now, while everything I saw about that show seemed to suggest it would be terrible, at the same time, it did seem to be a bit different from CBS's usual formula. So will this show's failure hamper any effort CBS might have taken to do something different with their lineup and play into the hands of the execs who just want to put on NCIS Duluth and Chuck Lorre's latest show, A Guy, a Girl, and a Laugh Track?
I think you're onto something there. I think also a little research would show you that while most people didn't like that show, I gave it a pretty good review. How about that?
How about that?
It's why we watch the unexpected. One expects the Spanish Inquisition. So
CBS,
I did like it.
CBS does take chances.
They did, and since that failed, they might not take any more.
I don't know. They always seem to be good for some wacky premise or other. Maybe not a chance like that one, but they seem open to taking chances here and there. Like, they've got enough success that they can make a few gambles every season. It seems like, I mean, Supergirl, you could argue, is kind of a gamble.
Absolutely.
For them,
Supergirl's
too.
A total gamble for them. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. You might be onto something, James. not in the holler.
Right.
All right. This is a last letter. It's Indy Sarah.
Oh, it's Indy Sarah. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. See, look,
aforementioned Indy Sarah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were just reading messages from her. Well, here's this one. Hello, sweeties. Love from the 317.
Yes.
She knows how to do it. That is.
She does. She knows how to butter me up, right?
That's right.
She's just so sweet and adorable, so I'm going to be yes. That, if she had a British accent, it would be like all over.
Yeah, but it says she's in Indiana.
She's in Indiana. Yep. But yeah, there you go. I've never been there.
Yeah, I've been a few times. Of course, David Lohr, friend of the podcast, right there in
yes,
in
David
Lohr,
very consistent. I also like, just as also an aside, how Mr. Lohr, who does listen, will periodically just hear something and say, "Here's my little aside to it." So he's steady. He's reliable.
He is absolutely. Mm-hmm. He's also. I should say we were discussing on Twitter, and also David jumped in, and Moises Chuyan jumped in, this idea, who is in Austin, about like the planning of the ATX festival. And, you know, you had a little back and forth with the ATX, the Austin TV festival people. And
right.
I just tossed in there a little like, but you know, you gotta talk up the TV talk machine live at the ATX festival, so I can find a reason to go to Austin. But I'm sure you will be there at the very least.
I think
having
you just
brisket
want tacos
with
Moises. And yes, yes.
I just want Moises, brisket, yeah. Man. I just want some nice barbecue Texas beef brisket.
That's I'm thinking you're looking brisket and queso and beers, and you're like, okay, man. If I have to edit a podcast while I'm there, there you go.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I made queso for the Super Bowl. It was pretty sweet. Actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I did. Right.
I'm not going to cast aspersions on whether I think that is going to be well done or not. I'm just going to say, all right.
It was quite good. It was, with beef short ribs and
like North Bay Mex.
And she's, yeah, that was exactly it. North Mex, Marin Mex.
Marin Mex.
All right, Indy Sarah, this is longer than I fit in a tweet. It's probably inside baseball, but here it goes. With networks such as CBS launching their own streaming services, I wondered if the move would make shows available that weren't before. In particular, I loved NBC's show Ed, but have heard for years the music licensing kept it from a DVD release. Do streaming services, network-owned or otherwise, make it easier for shows like that to resurface?
Oh, that's an interesting question. And we can also kind of riff on the showrunner of that Star Trek that's going to be on CBS.
Oh, yeah.
That was a big
deal. We can get that. It was news that I didn't mention. Yeah.
Yeah. And I figured you're going to know all about that.
I'm on it.
Okay. But to the question, I don't think it does make it easier. I mean, maybe you can, having more of them can divide up the payments, but not everybody. Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, that one,
it might be harder because I mean that's where like Shout Factory has made a decent amount of money doing DVD releases of these kind of esoteric shows that are expensive, and the reason they do that is because you have to spend extra money to clear the licensing or pay the rights for those songs, and so it actually, I think, becomes harder to get that stuff on streaming because presumably the streaming doesn't pay as well.
Yeah, there's definitely that. There, people think that streaming is a save all. I'm not sure that that's true. And I'm trying to think because the first band who did the Ed theme song,
well, it was Foo Fighters.
Foo Fighters, yeah. Right? Yeah, and then it was Clem Snide, one of my favorite bands, was the second one. So when they couldn't, I think it was NBC. I think Rob had told me, the guy who created it. Rob had told me that. NBC was not going to pony up for what the Foo Fighters were asking, or maybe the Foo Fighters were saying, you know, maybe it wasn't a good idea. We'll take our stuff off this. And then Clem Snide came in. It was a great, you know, great song also on that. But yeah, I don't know. I would actually, I like the idea of what she's saying though, is that maybe stuff that doesn't even get into wide DVD release and then thus far then doesn't get streamed. Wouldn't it be nice to go into your own vaults and stream some stuff? Yeah. I would certainly love to see that. Cause there's, I mean, think of all the, like the really good Fox shows, that barely made it. And I don't think those are, I mean, unless I'm wrong, I don't think those are being streamed because a lot of them didn't even get through one season or just one and maybe another couple of episodes before they were canceled.
Yeah, a lot of stuff is just kind of floating around and maybe there was a DVD and maybe not. And
yeah,
you would think at some point they will go back to the catalog as a way, like CBS All Access, it's a good example of, you know, CBS wants to make sure that that thing is stocked so that they've got some material to say, look at the shows that you can watch if you're on, you know, if you're on CBS All Access. And presumably other networks would do the same. That one's, Ed is a weird one because it was produced by Worldwide Pants, so David Letterman's company, mm-hmm. and it was a co-production of CBS and NBC, essentially. So who knows who has the rights and how that would work out. So there may be some ownership problems with that show, too. I don't know. I like that show.
That's all over the map.
That's Tom Cavanagh. You may know him as Harry Wells from the TV's The Flash, but he was in that. I liked that show.
Do you remember that he did? Speaking of just circling back quickly to CBS trying other things and not having it work. Do you remember when Ed Cavanagh was on a CBS series at about the music business?
Yes, I do. That was called. Was that not Love Monkey?
That was Love Monkey. Look at you.
Yeah.
And, oh, that's such good. That's such a good
Tom
pull.
Tom Cavanagh, yeah.
Yeah. I would just like to take a look at the inside of your gray matter. It's just pristine. The pipes are just pristine in there.
Yeah, Love Monkey. Wow. That was CBS really trying something different, like for younger viewers, and it just died.
Boy, I like that show too. I really like that show.
Yeah, Tom Cavanagh. He's been in a lot of good stuff, and he's very likable. But that one just didn't take.
Yeah, Canadian.
Yeah, Canadian. Oh yeah,
they're totally. So likable. Mm-hmm.
How could you not be?
Right.
Crazy. Hi, Canada. We haven't heard from Canada.
Yeah, Canada. Right. What is with Canada? We used to have all the provinces checking in, and now they're
it's
kind of
too
gone.
Cold right now. They're just bundled up, huddled together for warmth. They'll emerge in the spring. It's dark. It's cold.
It's dark. It's cold. There's hockey on.
Yeah. It's good enough. That's just to keep you alive until the sun comes up in
totally agree.
In April. The CBS All Access news. Brian Fuller was named the show the showrunner and co-executive producer along with Robert Kurtzman who worked with J.J. Abrams on a bunch of TV stuff, Lost, Fringe, all of that, and the Star Trek movies. Brian Fuller, most of us know him. He did Hannibal, but before that, he also did two really super, like, bright, glossy, weird, stylish shows. Wonderfalls, which kind of died on Fox. Speaking of a show I want to see again. That's a good show that didn't kind of make it on Fox. And then Pushing Daisies, which he had more success with on ABC, a couple seasons of that. And what people don't remember about Brian Fuller or don't know about him is that he is a lifelong Star Trek nerd, and he got his break writing for Deep Space Nine and Star Trek Voyager. So he has the Star Trek background, he has the showrunning cred, and he's going to be the showrunner of the new Star Trek series. And you probably want somebody like that, and there aren't that many people like that who have sort of been a proven showrunner who can take on this franchise but actually like have a history with the franchise. There, how many people even qualify for that? I mean, Ron Moore, who I doubt would be asked back because I think he burned all of his bridges when he went and did Battlestar Galactica. There are a handful, but there aren't that many. And Brian Fuller is one of them. So I thought that was kind of an encouraging. He's an interesting guy with a lot of kind of big ideas that I think might invigorate that franchise. And boy, it needs it.
Yeah. And that sort of broke Twitter for the Nerdville.
They
all went crazy. If I'm not mistaken, Fuller's from San Francisco originally.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. I think he is.
Interesting.
Look that up. Yeah. I vaguely remember talking to him at a party about that many, many, many years ago.
Yeah. Well, he's a California guy. I guess he's from the Northwest.
I wonder if he was living in San Francisco before he came down.
That could be. Hmm. That could be because he's from Washington.
Yeah.
But anyway,
but clearly
the
gray matter of my own is clearly not as pristine as yours. Yeah.
Well, that's okay. Love Monkey. We can't all remember.
Can't all remember
all
that.
Of those things. So, you know, what do you think, Brian Fuller? I mean, he's shown that he's got a vision, and his shows are all kind of a kind, right? They're all have a take. They're interesting, even if you like them or not like them. I mean, Hannibal is what Hannibal is. And Pushing Daisies was like that. Very different from Hannibal, but like it was Pushing Daisies all the way. It was its own thing.
Oh, yeah. Pushing Daisies. I mean, those are the things. I mean, that and The Tick. Boy, would I like to have those back. But he's fantastic. I've got no problem with that pick. My response to the internet blowing up over that was of course to go to the premature jocularity tweet.
You and I had a thing about this, which is it's great that you've picked a good showrunner, but in the end, the only thing that matters is are they good episodes,
right? Because we've been burnt before, people. Uh-huh. Like really good people, really good showrunners, really good creators can make not very good shows.
Yeah, bad things do happen to good showrunners. It happens. I think my feeling is that you need, for this to have any chance to succeed, you've got to get a good showrunner. But it doesn't make it a fait accompli at that point. Now it's the degree of difficulty is still pretty hard, but at least they've got somebody in there who I think has a chance to pull it off.
Right. And from a business standpoint, because you and I talked several podcasts ago, mm-hmm. about what are the likelihood that a standalone operation, streaming operation from CBS of all people, is going to inspire tons and tons of subscribers. Well, if you're going to do it right, you just did it right by you made that the show that you're starting with, which is a little bit niche, but it's those people who will do it, mm-hmm. and then you've got the guy they want. So that's kind of amazing.
And then who knows, maybe you pull some of the, you know, all the old Star Treks and maybe even some of your other stuff like the CW shows and Supergirl, and you pour them into CBS All Access, and you might have a little, you might have a nice little package there. I don't know.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see what happens. It's good that they found somebody. It's when you announce a show but don't actually have anybody to do it, that's a bad sign. And that's where they were a couple months ago when they announced this. And this suggests that at some point here we'll hear about a premise and they'll start doing casting so that they can have actors to make a show with that's supposed to premiere in January. Because they got to get going on that. So now they've got a writer.
Yeah, that was the ultimate, I will believe this when I see mm-hmm. it.
And oh, yeah, that's Deadwood movie level stuff, right?
And then they're like, aha, Tim Goodman, Brian Fuller, how do you like them apples?
Somebody you've actually heard of who does good stuff. So, yeah, all right, well, we'll find out. I'm looking forward to seeing what he tries. All right, let me give the numbers. You can always contact us at podcast@tvtalkmachine.com or send us a tweet to TVTM on Twitter. You can find our Facebook page, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. And you can find us on Twitter. I am Jay Snell on Twitter, and Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. Did I forget anything?
No.
Love Monkey was the name of that show. Tom Cavanaugh, that's it.
And we didn't even have to check the box or apologize for anything that we said earlier.
We checked the box so many times last time that it's probably okay that we didn't do that this time.
Right.
So we'll be back in a week with more stuff. Tim, have a good weekend. It's a pleasure as always to chat with you about television.
Same, and enjoy your weekend, and let's come back refreshed.
All right, we will be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for episode 71 next week. Bye, everybody.